Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
So welcome to another episode of Speaking of Reliability. My name is Chris Jackson.
And this is Adam Barrett.
And today we're talking about two of the more prevalent testing techniques used by reliability engineers, which are HALT and ALT. And so HALT, notwithstanding my outrageous accent, is spelled H-A-L-T, and ALT is spelled A-L-T. So what's the difference between HALT and ALT, Adam?
Well, those two acronyms being so close is unfortunate because the two tests could not be any more different. Mm-hmm. I always look at the tests on what's the blend between measuring and improving reliability as far as its objectives. I think it's very important. And those two are on opposite ends of the spectrum entirely, because HALT testing looks to improve reliability, and it really doesn't do a good job of measuring reliability. And I'll talk more about that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
ALT testing looks to measure a factor and really doesn't offer you a lot of input to improve the way it's designed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you kind of have to start the conversation on what a poor acronym HALT is, highly accelerated life testing. And Dr. Greg Hobbs, who created it, will openly admit that it was a mistake. And that's mainly because it doesn't tell you anything about life, and it's not really a test. It's an investigation tool, because you don't look to pass it. Actually, if you do the testing and have no failures, it was an entirely big waste of time.
Mm-hmm. So for those who are not familiar with HALT, why is not having a failure a waste of time?
Sure. Well, the entire objective of HALT is to put excessive stresses that are far beyond anything it would see in use and may not even be directly correlated to the types of stresses in use. What I mean by that is the product may not see vibration, but you put it through vibration stresses. And the idea here is to see what failure modes look like. And what I mean by see and not measure is you might see how something breaks in their vibration, and this you take that as design input to consider, as you might find an easy mitigation in improving the design. But that might be a failure mode that occurs in a manufacturing defect if plastic injection molding is wrong or something gets welded wrong. And mm-hmm. that would simply occur, you know, in that population. So having nothing to do with the actual stress applied. So the failures and root causing them and analyzing and looking for potential improvements is how you would use it. So to improve the design.
So am I right in saying that you can never pass or fail a HALT test?
Exactly. It's simply for learning.
So what's the difference between – so if essentially I'm hearing that you get a product and you vibrate it, you thermally cycle it, you might expose it to electrical stresses, whatever it is. You keep doing these things until it breaks. And if it does break for that product, what's the next thing you do?
So you root cause and look at the failure, and typically the design engineers will be a little bit surprised as to how it failed. They didn't expect it. And if you think about it, it's an extension of a process they're already doing, where they are, when they sit down at their desk and design on paper, you know, so to speak, they're thinking about different failure modes, as they're hypothetically saying could fail this way, could fail that way, and it's influencing how they design. Well, this is the same type of information. It's just coming from a different source. Instead of it being hypothetical, they're getting to see mm-hmm. different ways it fails, which is information about how the design works. And some interesting examples are, one of my favorites is, you know, HALT was really officially kind of organized in the 80s and 90s. And an example I love of it goes back to the 1960s when they were developing the Apollo rocket motor, von Braun. And they couldn't get the cone as such a critical part. You know, the exhaust cone is a critical part of a rocket motor. And they couldn't get the cones to not crack. They had to be very lightweight, and they had to have they had very dynamic conditions they operated it in. Because even if you optimized it for sea level up at high altitude, the pressure differentials were so different that they would not handle the forces in the same way. And they couldn't come up with a design that would work. They kept cracking. And so it wasn't until they decided to set off black powder charges while it was being fired to shatter it that they began to understand the design well enough to make a cone that not only didn't break, but dampened its own any, it dampened out any vibration that occurred. So this was entirely because they abandoned just doing testing with thrust, you know, with firing the rocket, and they would literally blow it up just to see where it broke. So that's the philosophy.
So am I right in saying that essentially Holt answers the question, if my system is going to fail, it's going to fail like this?
Yes, exactly. A lot of the failures you do expose will not occur because there won't be events that can do it, but there will be a bunch that are. And usually they're the first ones that happen. So it, it could be that they, you know, in testing a rocket motor, it's hard. You can't do it at where the pressure drops dramatically on the outside, a high atmosphere. But if you do blow it up, with a black powder charge, now you've created stress differentials that might be similar, right? And the way it fractures there would be how it would fracture in those conditions. Or like I said, with manufacturing, when you have, you know, poor injection molding with plastics, it might break in a way similar to a normally injected system being vibrated excessively.
And I, having done several alt tests myself, I know that for, and I, when I say alt, I mean alt minus the H. And I always have to deal with a known failure mechanism first. And I'm guessing that this is essentially different to Holt testing.
Yeah, so this is where accelerated life testing is really the exact opposite. With accelerated life testing, you're looking to characterize the primary wear out failure mode. So you are doing everything possible to make sure you are replicating the type of failure and the amount of stresses it takes to cause that failure in the test. So we're looking for as much of an exact correlation, whereas with HALT, we don't care at all. And the reason why you have to know it so well is you have to model it in a way where you understand the stress to wear out failure mode so well that you can accelerate it and then interpolate what that actually is in normal time. So for example, you've identified that the breakdown of a material over time due to oxygen exposure causes an electrical dielectric change that causes a voltage, you know, spike. And you now have to understand the chemistry of that material to well enough to where if you put a higher temperature surrounding like an environmental chamber and run it, you run it at 10 degrees C higher, you realize that that same failure mode you're going to observe is in half the life. You're able to extrapolate that out with the Arrhenius model. And so now you can study those wear out failure modes that would have happened at 10 years. You can study them in 5 years. But of course, we go much higher to where we can study it in 3 weeks. So within 3 weeks, we can evaluate what the wear out is like and then obviously make design changes or just to validate that it does do its full required life.
And you need to be careful too. I know that, for example, fatigue is a failure mechanism you can accelerate if you can make a few assumptions about, in particular, high cycle fatigue. But there are cases where high cycle fatigue is very different to low cycle fatigue. So when you accelerate the stresses by increasing this, so you don't accelerate the stresses, you accelerate the damage being incurred by increasing the stresses, you can sometimes change the failure mechanism you're examining to another one which is now dominant. And that can be, I've seen many alt tests invalidated because they went too far. So there's always a limit to the extent to which you accelerate things for the purpose of estimating actual usage life.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand how critical that is, and they put in their schedule that they're going to do an accelerated life test, not realizing that you really have to create a foundation of investigations that ensure you have the right test and the right model and the right stresses. There really is a little bit of a research project that should happen first.
And it's always – and we're talking about increasing the stresses, but sometimes you can just increase the operational profile. So if you're going to do an accelerated life test of a toaster, you can test it by getting it to cook an entire loaf of bread every single hour for 7 days a week, how many weeks, and that could replicate 5-10 years worth of actual use without actually having to really investigate specific failure mechanisms. So there are ways you can make this whole testing thing much easier.
Yeah, it's always fantastic when you can simply eliminate adjust duty cycle. That's always fantastic. But it's not all that easy. You have to make sure that in reducing the duty cycle, you aren't adding an additional stress.
So, exactly.
So in other words, in a lot of cases, that duty cycle is where maybe heat gets dissipated, you know. Or also, you might actually be making it easier for it because removing duty cycle, it doesn't go through the full cycling. So something that heats up and cools down. And so it's not as simple as just removing it. You have to figure out how much you can adjust it to where it's not either adding or subtracting stress. But yes, that's always the absolute best when you can just compress something dramatically by because it has a low duty cycle in normal use.
And there are many systems where the biggest risk of failure occurs when it is turned on or turned off. So the duty cycle itself can't be simply we'll turn it on and never turn it off in those scenarios. And if and so I guess there might be some examples out there where that's okay because the designers know the system well enough that the startup and shutdown cycles aren't that big a deal. But you know, 9 times out of 10, they are a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So HALT and ALT, it's unfortunate that the acronyms are so similar and they almost sound the same when you say them. And it, I would love to see a movement that changes the HALT acronym to something else, you know, highly accelerated failure mode exploration, a HAFE. I don't know.
I think you missed the YAM in there, some HAFME. I don't know. That could be a good poll we have for our Shendo listeners, perhaps.
Yeah, let's start a movement. I'll make T-shirts.
That's right. So the notes I've written so far are that HALT is trying to investigate the weaknesses of a system for the purpose of improving the design, where ALT investigates a particular failure mechanism for the purpose of estimating useful life in a compressed time frame.
That's how I would define them.
And there are cases where you do HALTs first to identify the prevalent or the most dominant failure mechanisms, which then inform your ALT testing thereafter. So if your HALT finds that, high cycle fatigue is your dominant failure mechanism, well, that's a failure mechanism you're going to then focus on during ALT testing thereafter. Notwithstanding, there should be a bunch more research done as well to support that conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, HALT testing should be done truly multiple times in a product development program. Because it is learning. It's learning about how the design, you know, fails, which has to do with how it operates. And as a design is changing and maturing, those factors change.
So I'm going to ask you a leading question, Adam. Should you do HALT at the beginning, middle, or end of a design process?
Yes.
There you go. So have you seen HALT done poorly or the results of HALT not incorporated?
Yes, I would say one of the more common ways I would say it's not well applied is products design fully designed, and they create their prototypes, they run their prototypes, they're good. They put aside a few units for HALT, and it gets HALT tested. They see the failure modes that occur. There's interesting opportunities for improving robustness, but now the program is so late that it's hard to make the argument. You end up in the argument that, hey, we're only X amount of weeks away from release or getting the final manufacturing prototype where we don't want to change anything, and you're showing me these failure modes that are from stresses that don't even exist in real life. How do we know they're going to happen? And effectively, the test has no value, right? You just throw out the results. You're like, yeah, it failed under 20 Gs of vibration, and I can't tell you that that's what's going to happen here, but we see a simple change you can make that took it up to 40 Gs, which then means any, whatever variability in manufacturing or use or, environment has now been mitigated against by that much more robustness. But then to have it change the schedule at that point, the program's a freight train, right? With that kind of momentum, it's not going to be applied. You can't connect it to a failure rate that's going to happen in the field. You can't say, well, I'm going to save you a 10% failure rate in the field. So, yeah, I'd say that's one that, so now you've wasted time and money, basically, but you can check off, from our previous thing, security blanket, you can check off you did HALT testing, but it didn't yield much value.
I think we come back to an overarching theme of testing is that you only ever test to inform a decision. If it doesn't inform a decision or inform an activity, then essentially it's a waste of time, and it really is a candidate for that reliability security blanket we talked about in a previous podcast. So beyond that, if you haven't worked out what decision you're informing for any test regime, you should really consider whether you should do it in the first place.
Yeah, I always, my personal names for those are the intent and delivery anchors. I call it the anchoring method, where you always ensure every test and tool you do, you keep in sight the intent and delivery anchors. And The intent is the reason why you're doing the test. It's either answer a question to measure something or provide design input, and you keep it linked to that. And a lot of times that question will come from the DFMEA or somewhere else, right? You always keep it connected to the program, because if you can connect the intent of a test to a specific action from a DFMEA that was a high-ranking risk number that the entire team identified as high risk, how can somebody negate, or stop you from doing that test in a negotiation mm-hmm. for resource? Now you say, no, wait a minute. It's connected to this high RPN number from the whole team's, evaluation. So the intent stays there. Now, the reason why the delivery point's important is the point you just made. You needed to do it to get this information. But it's an information at a decision point, likely. So if the information is going to be delivered after the decision point, you've negated the value. And as the reliability engineer, you should suggest canceling the test and putting the resource somewhere else. Because I'm not interested in design robustness input 3 weeks before I'm about to release the product.
So Holt informs the decision you make, a design team makes, about what they can do to make that device more reliable in a very general way. What questions or what decisions does alt testing inform? That is, a test where we get a better idea about how long it's going to take before that system fails.
Yeah, so the intent for HALT is very, I think, very consistent, and it's singular. It's simply, it's really, if reliability is the study of variabilities, all testing really is on the border of being a design study, because it's measuring a design characteristic. And what I mean mm-hmm. by that is, reliability is usually studying what happens at the fringes of variability, things behaving not as they're supposed to. Wear out happens exactly as it's supposed to. It's a design characteristic. It's doing exactly, they will all do it within some bell curve, but they will all do it. There's no 60,000 mile car tire out there where you have a small percentage that do 250,000 miles. It just, it's a very consistent thing. You'll have some that'll do 70, 80, depending on variability of use, and some that do only 30. So for that matter, it's answering the simple question of when will a wear out failure mode begin to have an effect on the entire population? Mm-hmm. And that's obviously very important, because that's when the behavior changes. You've advertised to your customer, selling you a product with a 99.9% reliability. But that statement's only up to a certain period of time, right? Because then wear out modes begin to become dominant. So it's very important to be able to say, I'm offering you a 99.9% reliability up into 5 years. After that mm-hmm. point, it's going to change. And that last part of that statement, that information is yielded from accelerated life testing, as opposed to full life testing, which takes 5 years, which you don't have time for. Usually product life cycles or development cycles are much shorter.
Mm-hmm. Which is why we have ALT in the first place.
Right.
And so if you're advising a startup, for example, what sort of organizations would tend to focus more on HALTs versus ALTs and vice versa?
But that question to me
is loaded.
It's a faulty question.
Thanks, Adam. I worked very hard on that
one. You worked very hard on that one. If you're going to give me loaded questions, I'm going to criticize the questions. But here's why, to me, it's a faulty question. They have no relation to each other. You would not select one or the other, or the fact that you select one has nothing to do with if you've done the other one or not, mm-hmm. because the intent, right? The intent anchor. The reason why you select one of those is because of you're either trying to get a piece of design input or trying to get a specific piece of information. So there's no connection. So I think what you're getting at, and you said startup, is I only have X budget. What should I do first? I think you go back to that DFMEA and you say, what are we most worried about? Are we most worried about these wearing out too early, or are we most worried about these not being robust to variability? That's where your answer comes from.
Mm-hmm. Either way, that there are means to an end, which is to inform a decision, and different decisions are informed by different information requirements. And I think I see, at least my experience, and apologies for a poorly worded loaded question, perhaps, but it's just people don't know what they want to do, and so they have these ideas that these things will help them make a more reliable product, and there is an often you see people think that just by testing something without them doing anything else after that, somehow their product becomes more reliable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. It's that comfort thing that and people would probably go to HALT testing because it's less preparation, easier and quicker, right? Accelerated life testing takes a lot of upfront work to develop the right model. Where Hall testing, since we're not looking to make statements, you just go into it and you're like, you could literally say, let's blow it up with dynamite and see how it breaks. You know,
well, that's a good point, because for those who are listening, you can spend a lot of money on a Holt chamber. Some cost, you know, in the order of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And what these chambers can do is they can randomly vibrate in 6 degrees of freedom, a small electronic device, or even something much, much larger, depending on how much money you're prepared to pay. And they can also cycle the temperature, and they can sometimes cycle humidity, for example. But these things cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So what options are there out for an organization who does want to do Holt testing but clearly can't afford a $100,000 testing chamber?
I think even if you can afford the chamber, it's a big mistake to just go out and buy it. I mean, there's tons of Holt labs all throughout the country and the world. And, you know, you then go in and they, you know, you not only get the equipment, but you get the expertise to help you. And most Holt tests you can do in 3 days. So you rent chamber time for 3 days, and usually they give you a test technician or test engineer to help you with it. And, you know, you invest in it that way in small doses as you need it, like renting a car. And then at some point there would be a cost crossover if you find it to be a valuable tool. I mean, your product, it might be an extremely valuable tool to you, but your product development cycle is slow enough that it doesn't make sense to buy a chamber because you're doing it just twice a year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, usually you have to be doing it about 6+ times a year, where I think you'd even consider purchasing one.
And even if you do purchase one, I think you need to understand that you need to then employ a technician who needs to know what they're doing, which means they need to be trained and kept current with all these sorts of different things. Like, you can't be a secondary job of somebody else. It really is an occupation in its own right.
And the facilities is significant too, because it uses liquid nitrogen. So now you're talking about having a liquid nitrogen tank, having it plumbed into the building, and liquid nitrogen is very expensive and it gets consumed whether you use it or not. It's always boiling. And being vented. So even if you don't use it, it's still, you know, you still have to keep replacing it. So exactly, yeah, it takes a pretty high frequency of use, you know, in your product development programs to justify having a Holt lab in-house. And I would say most companies I do it are have multiple products, right? And their product development cycle, even since there's 5, 6, 7 types of products they're developing, there's always tests that need to be done. The Holt chamber is, you know, has a log, you know, to get through.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes companies do it because they want to protect their IP, but that's a different business consideration. But if there's any other questions people have about Holt and Olds, and we haven't covered them today, please feel free to contact us at Ascendo Reliability. Please feel free to put these any questions in comments. We do read them all, and we can are able to respond to them very individually. Or perhaps if you have a recommendation or just want us to talk about something different, again, please let us know. And I'm sure we can find a few minutes here and there to talk about them.
Yeah. Oh, it was great talking with you, Chris. I'm glad we had a chance to chat about it. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
And until next time, thanks for listening. And we look forward to you listening to us again soon.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.